gospel. Advance, please. Since around the 4th century, the land of Israel itself has been called the 5th gospel. And it's because if you don't understand the topography, the geography of the land, there is so much that we miss. And so it plays a vital impact. Like when we start reading where Jesus makes a comment about upon this rock and talks about the gates of hell. If you don't understand the geological background,
right,
there's things that we miss, right?
Absolutely.
Well, you know, even the land itself can be used in sharing the gospel. And we're going to do a little bit of that with you this morning. Advance, please. Because we read about a place called Bethlehem, and we know that the Messiah was supposed to come from Bethlehem, but where in Bethlehem? Just any place? You know, one of the things we find is that God is very specific. He's very detail-oriented. And there's a lot of prophecies, there's a lot of things in Scripture that if you don't understand the topography of the land, you miss. And one of those passages actually comes from the book of Micah, chapter 4 and verse 8. And in it, it talks about the Tower of the Flock. Tower of the Flock. Well, remember when we were in Israel, we went to a place that's around the Shepherd's Field. And there's this location that is called Migdal Eder. Migdal Eder, which means the Tower of the Flock. Well, what's so important about this area called the Tower of the Flock? And how does this relate to Jesus as being the Messiah? Migdal Eder, the Tower of the Flock, this is where we actually raised the livestock, the sheep, the lambs, to be used for sacrifices at the temple, and especially the Passover lambs. Now, we know that there are shepherds, but who does this?
I know now. I didn't know first service.
It's not just any type of shepherd. These are shepherds that were also priests. Because the sacrifice is required that they had to be without blemish, without spot, they had to be perfect, that means that they had to be raised in a certain way. These priests understood all about the sacrifices, and they were the ones that were best suited to raise these areas. So not only was Jesus born in a place called Bethlehem Ephratah, but he was born in a specific area of Bethlehem Ephratah at the place called the Tower of the Flock. And even many of the ancient rabbis taught that this is where the Messiah himself will come from. Now, Migdal Eder, well, it's in Bethlehem, but it's right on the edge.
Are we looking into Jerusalem there?
Yeah, actually, you're looking into part of Jerusalem. You know, so you're only from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, only 6 miles. So you're only about 3 miles, three and a half miles from Jerusalem. And that's one of the things that people, when they come to Israel, they don't realize just how close everything is. You know, they think, they read in the scriptures, they talk about they went on this journey. 6 miles.
6 miles. That's a long way to walk, though, you know.
Yeah, 6 miles can be a long ways when you look at the topography of the land. And we joke around in Israel, and I know you experience this, that when you come to Jerusalem, Jerusalem is uphill both ways.
Yes.
No, seriously, no matter where you are in Israel, you walk up to Jerusalem. So it is uphill both ways.
And let me say, these slides do not do the actual place justice.
Oh, no.
It is so much more gorgeous than these slides can catch.
Advance, please. Well, one of the places that we go is Nazareth. Now, one of the things, when you get to Nazareth, it really brings the scripture alive. Because one of the things you learn when you come to Nazareth is what?
Can anything good come from Nazareth?
Can anything good come out of Nazareth?
It was not a place that I care to go back to even.
Well, and you know, really, when you go back into the first century, it was a very insignificant spot. It's a very small location during the first century. During the first century, you're looking at between 200 to 400 people. And that's being very generous. So it wasn't on any of the major trade routes. So it's not the area that you would have thought that a king or a Messiah would come from. You know, everybody expected the Messiah to come from someplace like Jerusalem, not some little podunk place in the Galilee called Nazareth.
And it's still not impressive.
No,
the only thing I remember about Nazareth is that our bus driver got lost there. We like to never found him.
Boy, that's bad when we have to go looking for our bus driver.
That's right.
Advance, please. This also gives you, though, a good understanding of the homes that existed during the first century. What you're looking at is actually one of the homes that existed during the time of Jesus. You know, it's a very small home. And you can kind of get a better understanding of the upper part, the lower part where the animals would be. You can kind of see that area in the front where the steps were, where the children would sleep. So you're right there at the door. It really brings to life a lot of the passages that we read in the scripture. And of course, one of the things that we find is that, well, Jesus was not welcomed
right there
either, because a prophet is what?
He's
without honor in his own
hometown.
Yeah. But this is not very far from here, maybe a quarter of a mile from this location, is that actual synagogue where Jesus spoke in when we read in the book of Luke. Now, it's small, it's been built up, so it's not really much to it. But just remember that this is that area. Now, also, from here, about 4 miles from here to the north, is a place called Zippori. And Zippori was this huge site. And that's where we had all these little mosaic tiles, beautiful mosaic pictures. Some of these mosaics took as many as 22 different stones to create. And the detail was very, very intricate. The smaller the stones, the more intricate the detail. And we know that this is one of the areas that, well, Jesus would have worked. This is where his father, the carpenter, and him being the son of a carpenter, would have worked. And that was a pretty spectacular area.
You know, one thing that we are inundated with evolution and all of that kind of thing, like how that man was ignorant. But when you go to Israel and you see what they make, what they did, what we're talking about 2,000 to 4,000 years ago, it is intricate. And they were craftsmen. They were brilliant people. They were skilled. They were not ignorant people at all.
No, they were not. In fact, remember when we were in Jerusalem, we saw what we called the main course. This stone, we call it the main course. It is 42 feet long, 24 feet high, and 14 feet thick. And it is placed with such precision that you cannot put a razor blade in between the stones. Weighs over 660 tons. Now, a modern Israeli crane can only lift 250 tons. This was 660 tons. And what most people don't realize is that if you were to go underneath the Temple Mount and you look at the temple foundation, it's earthquake-proof. The way that it is built, it was built to survive earthquakes.
It's amazing.
And after 2,000 years, all the earthquakes, it still hasn't affected it. So, yeah, these people were truly craftsmen. Let's advance, please. Well, because a prophet is without honor in his own area, we find that Jesus leaves Nazareth, which I don't blame him at all, you know. And, oh, yeah, believe me. And he left Nazareth, and he comes to the Sea of Galilee.
This is the most gorgeous place in all of Israel, right here.
Oh, yes.
And you know, that doesn't do it justice.
You know, I have to say, sometimes I wonder why God chose Jerusalem to put his temple. Because if it had been me, I'd put it right there on the north end of the Sea of Galilee. Can
yes.
you imagine the view from there?
Oh, my.
You know, it's gorgeous. But what's interesting about this place is not only to me is it one of the most beautiful places, but there's a peace, a tranquility that exists here that you don't find anywhere else.
What was the name of our hotel that we stayed there?
That was the Leonardo.
Leonardo. We would go out on our balcony in the mornings and out, and you could see across the Sea of Galilee, and it was so tranquil, just looked like glass, and it was just so peaceful, and you just didn't want to leave.
Oh, I didn't want to leave. There's times they almost have to force me to get on the bus. It literally hurts to get on the bus to leave the Sea of Galilee. Now, this is where we kind of joke around, because we call it the Sea of Galilee. It's actually a freshwater lake. It's about 14 miles long, 7 miles wide when it's full, and about 150 feet deep. Now, why would we call it a sea if it's a lake? Very simple. In ancient Hebrew, there's no word for lake. Any large body of water, we have to call it a sea. So, but I tell you what, you know, you look at this picture now, you see it very tranquil, very placid. You let the wind kick up, and it can get nasty out here real fast. And I mean real fast. If you've ever been around the Gulf of Mexico on a red flag day, when you have these big waves crashing, that's what the Sea of Galilee will look like when a storm hits. And it can get real nasty real, real quick. And if you notice the boat, this is the type of boat that we take the people out on during the daytime.
Yes, we did. We had a good time. We went out, and our guides, they played Jewish music. Some of them played Southern gospel, and some of them played. But ours, I think we had some influence here. But they did Jewish music, and some of them got out and danced. They did the Jewish dances, and it was just a wonderful time. Then we had a time of devotion, and Leroy prayed and made us all cry, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
And you know, it's amazing how many people, when they come here, they do get very emotional, especially here on the Sea of Galilee, because for some reason, when they get out there on the Sea of Galilee and they get out in the boat, it's like something hits them. It's like reality finally hits them. I had a pastor with me several years ago whose name was also David. That was a Baptist pastor. Very, very quiet man.
Like me. Oh.
A whole lot more timid than you.
Oh.
I mean, this guy was really, really timid. And it was the third day that we had been there. We were on the Sea of Galilee, and all at once, his eyes gets real big, and he goes, "Wow, we're really here." I said, "Yes, David, we're really here." He said, "But you don't understand, we're really here." "Yes, David, you've been here for 3 days now, but we are really, really here."
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a Baptist have a Pentecostal experience.
Yeah, there
right
you
there
go.
On the Sea of Galilee. But it is, and it's not unusual for people to get out there and just start bawling.
Yeah,
because the emotions really, really hit you. Let's advance, please. Look at this big, wide river. That's about as wide as it gets. And this is, yes, the mighty Jordan River. Now, you said it was what?
Salado Creek. That's about the size of Salado Creek. It's
no joke, it really is. You know, and it's funny because before people come to Israel, you know, I'll ask them, "So what do you think the Jordan River is going to look like?" And they start describing for me the Mississippi.
Or the Nile.
Yeah, and then we get there and we're on the bus and we cross over this bridge. And inevitably, they'll look out and go, "So what creek is this?"
Yeah.
And we'll go, "No, this is the mighty Jordan." And they'll go, "No, really, seriously, what creek is this?" And about that time, they see the road sign that says Jordan River. Now, I used to go canoeing down this. But during the summer, we'd have to get out of our canoe because we're dragging bottom. But again, remember this is where Jesus was baptized. And the area that you can tell them about the area where Jesus was baptized, that what you experienced there as far as the Jordanian.
Yeah, on one side was Jordan, and the soldiers were there with their guns, and they were guarding that side. And on our side, the Jewish army was there, and they had their guns, and they were guarding that side. And so we... It was a little. It wasn't scary, but you could kind of see the conflict. They're not going to bother the tourists, but
they're keeping an eye on it.
They're keeping an eye on each other.
Yeah, they want to make sure you don't go over to the Jordanian side.
That's right. And you don't want to.
You don't want to.
But this is about as wide as it is anywhere.
Actually, this is probably one of the widest areas. It's one of the widest. All right, if you advance, please. Now, most people, when they think of Israel, they think of this dry, barren, desolate land. You know, this hot, dry place. Because I know here in Arkansas, we talk about it being hot. But you come to Israel, I'll show you hot. In July and August, the average temperature is 120 degrees. On a hot day, it's 155. So it gets warm here, but it does not get hot. So most people, when they read the scriptures here, like in Matthew, it talks about that when Jesus heard of it, he departed thence by ship into a desert place. And we read again in the book of Mark and in the book of Luke, talking about this desert place. But Luke gives us a clue, because Luke tells us that it's a desert place belonging to the city called Bethsaida. So what do you think of when you think of a desert place? Advance. This is what most people think of, right? This is a desert place. And this is the southern part of Israel. It's called the Negev, and it gets very hot here. Well, you can see how much vegetation we have. So when we say desert, we mean desert. I got myself in trouble one time. I was in New Mexico, and I was going to be going to this particular area, and they said, oh, yeah, you're going to be out in the desert. And I got there, and I started looking. I see all these tumbleweeds. I see cactus everywhere. I see plants. I'm thinking, where's the desert? Because to me, that was desert.
Yeah.
But remember, Luke says that it was the desert place belonging to the city of Bethsaida. So advance. Welcome to the desert of Bethsaida. Now, this is my kind of desert.
Yes.
You see, the Hebrew word that's used for a deserted area is the word midbar. And midbar does mean a desert, but it also means a grassy land, a green grassland, uninhabited by people. And of course, if you look, you can see the Sea of Galilee in the background. We're actually on the northwest side of it. And you can see all the banana bushes, all the lush vegetation. Wonderful place. They've got wonderful fruit.
Yes, they do.
Advance, please. Well, we made mention of this area earlier, of where Jesus asked his disciples, who do you say that I am? And of course, we know that Peter responds by saying what? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Why say living God? Why not just say, you are the Christ, the Son of God? Wouldn't that have been sufficient?
No.
No?
No.
Why not? Why do we have to say the living God?
It has to do with geography.
Geography, yes. Well, we also, there's a couple other clues. It says, upon this rock will I build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail. Well, most people, when they read that, they think in this abstract, right?
Right.
Well, let's go there. Advance. Welcome to the gates of hell. You see, the Romans and the Greeks actually believed that this was the gates of hell. It was the gates to the underworld. In fact, at that time, it was a bottomless pit. And anybody who went in, you didn't come out again.
They actually threw people in and animals.
Threw people in, yes.
Babies.
Nothing came out.
Right.
So they thought that this was really the gates of hell. And, of course, you notice the big rock. But if you look to the right, you see that in that carved out area, that niche. Well, that gives us some other clues to this. Because let's look and see what it looked like during the first century. Advance, please.
There's Pan.
Yes, that area that we saw that was cut out, mm-hmm.
That is where one of the pagan deities called Pan was worshipped. Now, when we think of Pan, most people don't realize, but your word panic comes from Pan. Because one of the things that Pan would do is he had this terrible scream, which caused people to
panic.
Panic. And literally, that's where a lot of your English words comes from. But he was a hunter. You notice that he looked like a goat. And it seems like these people around this area of Caesarea Philippi, which is where this was located, had a real fetish when it comes to goats. Because they had all these different pagan temples set up to the temple of the dancing goats.
He was also into, he was bisexual, also into bestiality.
Oh, yeah.
Whole, it just perverted.
Oh, yes. And, of course, here you also had the nymphs.
Yep.
Which any time where you had water, you had the nymphs. And we're not talking about what you use for fly fishing. Advance. This is what we were talking about. See all these pagan temples? The one that is there by the cave, that was actually for Augustus. The one then beside between the two buildings, that was the Temple of Pan. And of course, then to the big white one there was for Zeus. And then you had the one for the dancing goats. So when Peter made his comment, he said, you are the Christ, the Son, not just of God, because they thought they were sons of God, but you're the Son of the
living God.
And of course, you see the great big rock that we were talking about. Advance, please. About a mile from it, oh, I know. By the way, we have some wonderful, wonderful waterfalls. And what's so funny about this one, this is only a mile from Caesarea Philippi where we were. And it can be 110 degrees outside. And I will take people here, and there's this canopy of trees. And we walk down this path to get to this canopy of trees. And you see all the water splashing on the rocks, forming this mist. Because of that canopy, it actually forms this natural air conditioning. It's 110 degrees outside, and invariably I will have women complain about it being cold.
It's nice.
Well, we know that Jesus went to Caesarea Philippi, so if he went there, I'm pretty sure he knew about this place. And he would have gone here too, especially during the summer. It was nice and cool.
So this may give us insight into living water.
Right. Yeah. When
out of your belly shall flow.
Right. And that's, you know, when you think of it, out of your belly shall flow rivers of living water. And you notice that that water is energized.
Yes.
It's not stagnant. It's energized. It's refreshing. It supports life. And so there's a lot of lessons that we can learn from just the land itself.
This is also the headwaters of the Jordan River.
Right. This is one of the headwaters. Now, we also went to a place called Dan, and there at Dan, we had over 200 underground springs that would pop up and form some of these rivers. So, oh, yes, and there's some awesome trout fishing in here.
Ooh!
Anybody like trout? Advance, please. Again, this is the same area, and you can see the cave up there, the gates of hell. You see the waterfall, but you also see what we call the lilies of the valley. The red flowers there. And, of course, you can see that path that you walk down to get to the waterfall. And, of course, some people complain about that path because it's several
kind of,
steps
kind
going
of steep.
Down.
Yeah.
But several
but it's
steps
worth it.
Coming up, too.
Yes.
But, oh, yes, it is well worth it. Now, I have to admit, I have to confess that on one of our archaeological digs, we were supposed to go back to the kibbutz for lunch, and somebody who visited here formed a coup and decided that we wasn't leaving here and that they were going to have to bring the food to us.
Wow.
I won't tell you who formed the coup.
But it probably rhymes with that.
Huh?
It probably rhymes with coup.
Yeah. Yeah, every chance I get. All right. Well, we know that Jesus spent 80% of his ministry in the Galilee area. And advance, please, because here we're going to come to where this was his headquarters. This is a place called Capernaum. And again, 80% of his ministry is done in the Galilee, which when you come to the Galilee and you experience the Galilee, you understand why 80% of his ministry was done in the Galilee. If it had been me, it had been 100%.
Yes.
I would have never have left. But why was this area so important? Why did Jesus choose this area to make his headquarters? And it's because it was right on the major trade route called the Via Maris, or the Great Trunk Road, that connects Africa to Asia. That means that every caravan who came in the area had to stop here, because this is also where you had to pay tax. You had to pay toll. We joke around and say there was the first toll booth.
Yeah.
Because you did. You had, when you came in here as a caravan, you had to pay tax. And so with Jesus being here, it was the perfect situation. Very strategic. Because all these caravans would come in, have to stay there for a little bit, paying the tax. They get to hear Jesus. They get to hear his message. And they're going to take his message now with them as they travel. So it was very, very strategic in lots of different areas. And we could talk about the political situation, the religious situation, but it was a very, very important area.
This is the temple there, isn't it?
Right. This is the synagogue. And this is synagogues of the 4th century, but it's actually built on the foundation of the 1st century synagogue where Jesus was.
Yes.
And, of course, there's a lot of miracles that happened here. You know, you have the woman with the issue of blood. There's many, many miracles that took place in this area. Peter's mother-in-law here. Now, and I have to joke about it because...
Careful, my mother-in-law's here.
Oh. This is where the first church, the first home church was there in Capernaum. And the Catholics built a church above it. But the way that the church looks, it looks just like a flying saucer. You get there, it looks just like a flying...
Yeah, I remember that.
You remember
above,
that.
His mother-in-law's home, wasn't it?
Right.
Yes.
Right. So there's a lot of miracles. And what the sad thing is, despite all the miracles that took place here, well, we know that the people here did not accept him. And this is one of the three cities that Jesus gave his woe to. And we went to those other two. We went to Chorazin, where the wheat for the temple was built, raised. We also went to Bethsaida, where some of his disciples came from. In fact, Bethsaida, next to Jerusalem, Bethsaida is the most mentioned place in the New Testament. And I excavated there as well.
Ah.
All right, advance, please. Again, we're here in Capernaum. You can see the bougainvillea, and you can see that it's a beautiful area. Palm trees. Advance, please. From here, we go to another miracle. It's the miracle of the swine, where Jesus cast the demons into the swine, and they went out into the lake. And somebody asked me earlier, what was the whole deal about the swine? Why did the demons want to go into the swine? Well, a lot of people don't realize, but this was the land of the seven. This is where a lot of Canaanites were, even during the first century. And so the Canaanites had a habit of sacrificing pigs to demons. Oh. So there's already a thematic connection here. And it's funny, one of the pastors, Don Hall, you remember Don?
Yes.
Don Hall was this pastor that was with us. And he had read in his commentaries that the area where these swine were, that God cursed that area and that nothing would grow to this very day here.
There it is.
We pulled up in the bus. He looked at it. He said, "Where are we?" I said, "Welcome to Quercy." Now, what you don't see is we're surrounded by groves of mangoes and banana bushes. So, wonderful, wonderful place. And I excavated here.
I was going to say, a lot of right. You don't know that Dale has his doctorate in archaeology and was the...
I was the acting director for this dig.
Yeah. So, he goes over and digs with spoons and picks and toothbrushes and all those kind of things.
Yeah, I've had people tell me I'm still a kid that likes to play in the dirt.
Yeah.
The difference is now I get paid to play in the dirt. Advance, please. Here you have, again, the Sea of Galilee. And you notice how it's shaped like a harp? That's actually where it got its name, Lake Kinneret. Comes from the Hebrew word kinnor, meaning a harp or a fiddle. And, of course, if you look up there in the upper right-hand corner, you see that green hill, and you have that switchback on it. Remember we talked about the demoniac, and when the demons were cast into the swine, he wanted to follow Jesus, and Jesus told him no, he couldn't. But he sent him back to where he was from, and it says that in Mark that he went back to the Decapolis. That is the Decapolis that he went to. And so, in fact, a lot of people say that he might have been one of the first Gentile converts. If you look at the bottom down there, you can see this area called the Valley of the Doves.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you loved that area.
I did.
Now, some of us actually took the hike down from on top of that hill up there. We hiked down. It took us about 30, 45 minutes to hike down.
Some of us old ones rode the bus.
What's funny is we beat you.
Yes, you did.
All right. But you really love that Valley of the Doves.
I love the Valley of the Doves. I wish we had a picture of it that showed right the pathway. That's so neat.
What's so important about that pathway is that is the path that Jesus would have taken going from Nazareth to the Galilee.
Yeah.
Because it's very hilly in the area. And so the best path is to go through that area, the Valley of the Doves. So again, that's one of those areas that we can take you to that we can say, did Jesus pass through here?
Yes.
Most definitely. This is the route that he would have taken going from Nazareth to go up to Capernaum and Bethsaida. Advance, please. Now, remember we talked about the Sea of Galilee? Early one morning, I got up and I took this picture. It was kind of choppy that morning. And that's one of the boats that, kind of like one of the boats that we took people out on. But you notice now it's pretty choppy. And it, like I said, it can get nasty. When the storms come in, it can look like the Gulf of Mexico on a red flag day. So this boat actually broke loose from the docks. And you can see a man inside there that's trying to wrestle with it and trying to get control of it. He finally did get control of it, but it took him a long time to get control. In fact, I was afraid it was going to slam into the beach before it did. Advance, please. Now, can you imagine being on the Sea of Galilee when it's that real wavy, the crashing waves like Galveston on Red Flag Day in this boat? This is the type of boat that was used in the first century. In fact, we nicknamed this the Jesus boat because it was during that same time period. Now, you could get 16 men in this boat. Now, it's only 25 feet long. It's about 25 feet long and about 7.5 feet wide.
Some skinny men.
Well, again, what most people don't realize is that during the first century, the average Jewish male was 4'10 to 5'2 and weighed 120 pounds. So, yeah, you can see where you could get 16 people in this boat. But you also notice it's covered. And we read in the Gospels where Jesus, what, went down below to sleep? Well, that's where he would have gone down below. But can you imagine being on that boat
when
it was choppy? And down below. And we find in the Jewish writings that it tells you, especially during the summer months, after when the winds come up, if you're on the west side of the lake, you might as well stay on the west side. Or if you're on the east side, you might as well stay on the east side because you're not getting to the other side.
That would be a fishing boat there?
That's a fishing boat.
Okay.
A big fishing boat.
Big fishing boat.
Advance, please. This is what we had to wake up to every morning.
Suffering for Jesus.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I was out there every morning with my cappuccino or my Turkish coffee, suffering. Don't you feel sorry
for
me?
I was there.
Advance, please. What I really like is to be there at night. I'll get up sometimes about 3 o'clock in the morning and go sit on the rocks there on the Sea of Galilee. And I look across, and you can see all these lights, and they're kind of flickering. And because of the distance, it actually looks like some of the campfires. And so it's very reminiscent of what it would have looked like during the time of Jesus. So sitting there, looking across there, it's like, wow, this is probably the same type of view that he would have had during his time period. We move now to Jerusalem. And you see the olive tree? These olive trees are over 2,000 years old. Nowhere else in Israel will you find olive trees this big. Now, you saw olive trees several times in Israel, right? But it's only here that you saw them this big. And just kind of give you an idea, it would take Pastor, myself, and probably one of you guys up front here with our arms stretched out, finger to finger, to wrap our arms around it. And they still produce olives after 2,000 years.
So these trees were there when Jesus...
These trees would have been there during the time of Jesus, yes.
During the...
Mm-hmm. And this is the Garden of Gethsemane. This is where Jesus came to pray. And one of the things I love to do is to take the people into this area and give them an opportunity to find a little corner somewhere and to spend some time in prayer. That's another one of those areas that can be very moving, very spiritual for the people, because you're right on the Mount of Olives. You're right across from the Temple Mount. You're right in the area where we know that Jesus is going to spend his last few hours. And so it can be a very, very religious, emotional area. Advance, please. As we walk down, remember we would take this walk going down the Mount of Olives. And about halfway we stop in an area where they believe that this is where Jesus stopped to pray over Jerusalem. And there you can really see a lot of his humanity as he stops and he looks across Jerusalem. Of course, that big yellow thing wasn't there. Wish it still wasn't there. One day it won't be there.
That's right.
But, you know, you can imagine him looking across here and really mourning and crying over the people who live there. If you look and you see that gray dome building over there, that was the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So
now this wall down here is the wall that...
Yeah, this is part of the old wall.
That goes around
Jerusalem. Right, this is part of the wall for the old city of Jerusalem. And it's also part of the foundational wall for the platform. And what most people don't realize, that platform that you see, of course, you're not seeing all that platform, but that covers 35 acres. So the Temple Mount itself was 35 acres. So that could hold a humongous amount of people. And remember, on all the different festivals, all the Jewish males were required to be here. So it required a very large area.
Was the temple back this way?
Actually, a little bit to the north.
To the
about
north.
100 yards north.
That way. Okay.
Yes. And again, you know, it's amazing here. Jerusalem's an interesting place.
I think your battery may...
Did my battery run out?
It ran out.
That's okay. I can turn up my volume. Another area that we bring the people to.
Let's try this. It may take them a second to get the right one.
Okay, let's go ahead and advance one more time, because we're going to go to where everything... Or I can't say ended, it really began.
Yes.
And when you go to Gordon's tomb, one of the things that's Gordon's Calvary, it's a beautiful place. It's very peaceful here. A lot of people will come here in this area to have communion and kind of bring the tour to a crescendo, to a climax here.
There's the garden is
out.
Out this back this way.
Right.
They're beautiful, beautiful garden that's there. That don't look very pretty there, but
but this is a first century tomb,
and they did find, they found a wine olive press there.
Olive press, and they also found a very large cistern, which if you're going to have a garden in that area, you need a large cistern.
So they think that that belonged to Joseph of Arimathea.
That's what's postulated. Yes.
And then not far from there is the what they call Golgotha, and the
right. Right, just a little bit to your right of this picture, you would have Golgotha, and there by the bus station.
Yeah.
But really, for me, I think everybody needs to come to Israel.
You think so?
Yes.
Are we segueing into something here?
I think so.
Okay. So we're looking at putting together another tour, not this coming year, but the next year, 2015. We're going to go in the month of March when it's still relatively cool over there. We didn't sweat much. We sweated a little bit, but it wasn't bad. And
I must have failed.
Yeah. So are you going to be our guide?
I will be your guide.
And I will be the...
You will be the host?
Yeah.
What a wonderful team, right? But we want to invite all of you to come. Seriously, to me... Every pastor needs to come at least once every 2 years.
All right.
Believe me, if I was on your board, it would be mandatory.
Good.
You want to put me on your board?
Yeah.
Because in all sincerity, folks, I can teach you more in 14 days in the land of Israel than what you can learn in 4 years of Bible college or seminary. Guaranteed. It is a wonderful experience. It's not a vacation. I know I'm the guide.
But it is enjoyable. It's educational. It's
spiritual.
Spiritual. And it is something else. Educational, spiritual, and a vacation. So, good food.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful food. Great fellowship.
And we like to do things a little differently. I want you to meet the people. Yes. A lot of tourists, they come to Israel, and they just come. They see all the different locations. They come back to their hotel. They eat. They go up, go to sleep. But they don't really get to meet the people. I want you to meet the people. Develop the relationships with them. In fact, remember, my bus driver and I have a very good relationship.
Yes.
And we do something that most tourists don't get to do. With our group, he will actually bring the tour group to his home, and his wife will serve you lunch. And so you get to see how the people live. You get to see the inside of their homes. You get to experience some Middle Eastern hospitality. And you get to have some of the traditional foods that all the locals eat.
Yes, and it's neat. It's neat.
So we want you to go ahead and start saving now.
Save money.
Save money and start walking.
Yeah, you got to be in shape.
We don't mean this little mamsy-pamsy thing about walking around the block. Right?
When you get to Jerusalem, you walk uphill.
Both ways.
Everywhere you go, it's uphill. But it's worth it. It's worth it. You know, you go into old Jerusalem, and it's just like stepping back into time. Because those little shops, what are they, 10 by 10? 10 by 10, and they're kind of, I don't know how you describe it. It's just
packed.
Packed. It is packed.
But you get a better understanding. And what I really like, and what most people don't get to experience on some of the others, is I like to take you through the old city. And you remember, we read about how the woman who had the issue of blood reached out and touched him. Mm-hmm. And Jesus said, "Who touched me?" And the disciples said, "What do you mean, who touched you?" When you walk through the old city, you understand.
People everywhere.
Shoulder to shoulder.
And they love to negotiate. I understand where you get, you know, Jewing somebody down. That's we understand where that comes from now.
Okay, all right. Since he went there, let me remind you why God made Gentiles. Because somebody has to pay retail.
That's right. I did get an offer for 100 camels for my wife. And I just could not figure out how to get those camels home. So I turned it down.
Oh. We do have a wonderful, wonderful time. And the way I look at it, you will come to Israel one way or the other. One way or the other, you will come to Israel. So you might as well go ahead, come now, get used to it. You need to get familiar with the land so you know where you want to stay.
I want to stay in.
I know where I'm staying.
Me too. Galilee.
Galilee. You can have Jerusalem.
Nope.
We're staying in Galilee.
You'd be in Nazareth.
Oh, no. Oh, no, you didn't. We really do have a wonderful, wonderful time. I think it's very important for you to come. And I especially think it's very important for pastors to
yes.
come. And I, again, want to thank you for listening to my plea and sending your pastors. I know they had a wonderful trip, had a wonderful time, a good time of learning. And, Pastor, I can tell you this, your second trip will be better than the first.
That's good. It'll be a dandy.
Because your first trip, you're so overwhelmed
yep.
by everything you see, hear, smell, touch. You go into sensory overload.
Yep.
Second time, you kind of know what to expect, and it's really awesome.
And information overload. There, we went to, 40-something places?
Right.
We traveled well over 1,000 miles by bus while we were in country. It's just amazing. I would love to do a trip every 2 years, host a tour every 2 years.
I think you need to.
Yeah.
I think you should.
So we're giving you plenty of warning, plenty of advance time that you can save your funds, and we'll in the next little bit we'll be having some meetings. Bring Dale back, let you ask questions, maybe give some insight in where you'd like to go and what you'd like to see, and we'll go
yeah,
and
because
have a
here's the beauty of it: with you being the host, me being the guide. We get to go pretty much wherever we
That's
want
right.
to go.
That's right. And we can put together a great trip that everybody would enjoy. Did you enjoy Dale today? All right.